For 75 years, NATO members have protected each other under the principle of collective defense. This spirit of solidarity not only shapes defense within the alliance, but also the camaraderie amongst the troops that stand with each other. I'm Amy Casey from BFBS, and this is NATO 75, an alliance rescue, a story of collaboration, solidarity, and friendship.
They said there are two German soldiers still on the ground in Kabul, and we needed to go in and pick them up.
Has anything like this ever happened to you before?
No.
But one of them said, look, just be careful. It's absolute chaos down there.
In August 2021, the city of Kabul was in chaos. After 20 years of military operations in Afghanistan, NATO forces were going home. The Afghan government and military had fallen to the Taliban, and on the 14th of August, US President Joe Biden announced that all US troops were to be withdrawn by September 11th.
I've concluded that it's time to end America's longest war. It's time for American troops to come home.
After the Taliban had taken control of all border crossings, Kabul Airport was the only secure route out of the country. NATO troops deployed to the airport to secure the airlifts of their nationals, embassy staff, along with Afghan citizens who had worked with coalition forces. The German government announced it was sending three A400M Atlas aircraft to the airport with a contingent of paratroopers.
My name is Mark Jenkins. I'm a flight lieutenant in the Royal Air Force, and I've been the British Exchange Officer in Germany for the last 10 years. The last five of which I've been based at Wunstorf on the A400M.
Mark, known as Jenks, had just returned from a family holiday.
I got a call from work saying we need a tactical qualified crew to go out to Tashkent, our forward operating base at the time, with the intention that we would then be flying into Kabul to go and bring out the evacuees there and fly them from Kabul to Tashkent. So the plan was then that Thursday the 26th was going to be the last flights into Kabul. There was one flight planned for the Thursday morning to go and bring out the last of the evacuees, and then three flights planned for the Thursday afternoon. So the plan was that all three aircraft would depart within 5 or 10 minutes of each other, land in Kabul, pick up all of the German soldiers that were on the ground there and that had been helping, and then fly back to Tashkent. In addition to that, there was to be a medevac machine that would fly. The A400 holds the medevac standby for Germany 24/7 every day, but during the Kabul evacuation operation, the medevac aircraft was sent to Tashkent and operated from there. My job was to fly the medevac aircraft, so I would fly from Tashkent into the Afghan airspace, wait there until everything had happened as planned on the ground, and then follow back at the end and then come and land back in Tashkent without ever landing in Kabul. Just in case anything happened and somebody was injured on the ground, then we would have a fully equipped medical team with us, and then we'd be able to go in, rescue whoever was injured, and then fly them back, and then the medical team would be able to take care of them. So down the back of the aircraft, you can imagine four hospital-level intensive care stations, a team of 12 medics that would be able to look after the patients and deal with whatever had happened. So that was the plan, and then the Wednesday we went into crew rest and ready to start the following day. We arrived in ops, we had an intelligence briefing, and the situation was looking pretty good, actually. There was no threat from the Taliban. The only possible problem area might have been ISIS-K, who were then a little bit fighting with the Taliban, but there was no threat at all against coalition aircraft that we were briefed on. So we then launched, the three aircraft launched as planned that were going to be landing, and we launched about 20 minutes after them. We flew then over the border into the Afghan airspace and spoke with the various controllers. And by the time we got there, the three other aircraft were on the ground and busy loading all of their troops on board.
What was the airspace like during this phase of the evacuation?
Controlled, but uncontrolled. But I think the biggest threat to us at that time was other aircraft, in that we're in an uncontrolled airspace. But everything was coordinated. So I knew, for example, that there were another couple of aircraft below me waiting to go into Kabul, and I was perfectly happy where I was, just waiting for everything to play out on the ground and for the other guys to depart. For my crew, it was, yeah, business as normal. We fly, we hold, we fly home again. Job done.
So your teams are on the ground. They're feeding back to you what's happening there. They're picking up the people that they're there to pick up. What happened next at that point?
Well, there wasn't any direct communication with us at the time. They were on the ground, and the plan was that I was going to be able to listen to them as they spoke with Tower and as they departed, and they would let me know when the last one was airborne, and then I'd follow them back out of the Afghan airspace and back home. That was the plan. So there was no direct contact.
But as anybody serving in the military knows, things don't always go to plan.
We heard then over the tower frequency that the airfield was closed, and there'd been some kind of attack on the airfield, and that all air traffic had stopped. And our guys were still on the ground then. And I don't know, for the first couple of minutes, we didn't know what was going on. We didn't know why the airfield had been closed. So we were talking amongst ourselves, all wonder what's going on. And then pretty soon we heard that there had been a terror attack.
A suicide bomber had walked into a crowd of families at the airport's Abbey Gate. They were hoping to board an evacuation flight. 170 civilians were killed, along with 13 US soldiers.
So we heard that, and we knew that our guys were still on the ground, and you then start to think, well, God, what must the situation be like then? Because beforehand, while we were on holiday, we'd seen the pictures of the C-17 that was there with the people all over the runway hanging off of the aircraft. And that was when the airfield was secure. And now there's been a terror attack, and goodness knows what was going on the ground. So our thoughts were definitely with the people on the ground, but there was still no indication that we needed to do anything other than wait. So then, I guess, training kicks in, and we think, well, okay, how long can we wait here? How much fuel do we have? What can we do? How can we help? But at that time, it wasn't really an awful lot. We had another few hours that we could wait, just waiting for information. The expectation was still that we would just stay where we were. I mean, as long as nobody was injured on the ground, then there was nothing for us to do. So we waited, and I guess it must have been half an hour or so. We heard that the airfield was then open for departures, and we listened to the three German aircraft depart, and then I think a Spanish A400 departed pretty soon afterwards, and then they called last man airborne, and that was mission over for us. So we then organized ourselves a little bit, getting ready to leave the hold, and we started then following the others back to Tashkent.
Meanwhile, on the ground.
I'm Master Sergeant Stefan, and I am a London officer soldier to manage logistics at Airborne Brigade 1.
When the attack happened, Stefan had been busy loading those three German aircraft, taking the last German troops and three heavy cargo units out of Kabul.
So we loaded the third aircraft and went back to the transshipment place. When we get in the transshipment place from the American, I saw that they closed the door. And the chief of the American came to the forklifter and said, "What are you doing? What are you doing? We are intact." So the American didn't let us go outside of the place. And we saw that the ramp closed from three aircrafts. Go to the ramp and flew away. I said, fuck, because my taxi at home flew away.
The bomb went off about half an hour before sunset. So I think the other aircraft must have been airborne around sunset, maybe just after, but it had definitely gone from being a daylight flight, which was what was planned, to then night. We have on board a satellite communication system, so people can essentially telephone us on board the aircraft. And the SATCOM rang, and I answered, and it was the ops center in Wunstorf. And they said that there are
two German soldiers still on the ground in Kabul, and we needed to go in and pick them up.
And the first thought was, goodness, where do we begin with that? Yes, of course we'll do it, not a problem. And then you just start going through the planning and, well, okay, what are we going to do? First thing we need to do is find out that they're definitely not on board one of the other aircraft. So we got their names. I called through to the other aircraft and said, look, these are the two guys that are on the ground. Do you have them on board? Do a quick roll call, please. So they went through, checked. A couple of minutes later, it came back. Nope, they're not on board. Okay, fine. Then we're going to go back and go in and get them. We'll see you in Tashkent. And then one of the crew members, I still don't know who it was, but one of them said, look, just be careful. It's absolute chaos down there. Okay, fine. And then we'd already had this mental picture of what it had been like down there. It was an unknown situation for us. The airfield was still closed, so we had a little bit of time to think about what we were going to do, how we were going to go in. Yeah, and then we started planning. It was my decision, but we discussed it as a crew. And normally, if we were planning on going to Kabul, we'd have an air mobility protection team with us, which is 6 to 8 soldiers who, when we land and stop, they get out of the aircraft, they have long-barreled weapons, they'll get off and they'll protect the aircraft. But on my crew, I had my proper air crew. Then we had 12 medics and 2 military police, and that was it. So I spoke with Groby, my loadmaster. I had 2 loadmasters, Groby and Tim. Groby is a very experienced loadmaster. He's got plenty of experience working with the air mobility protection teams. I said to him, look, just try and organize as best you can out of what we've got, some kind of defense for the aircraft when we're on the ground.
My name is Groby. I'm a technical loadmaster in the German Air Force. My rank is Senior Master Sergeant. I work with the Air Mobile Protection Team, and on this flight we haven't got a mobile protection team, and so I must talk to the medics and to the police, and I give them the role of the mobile protection team.
And all of the team were ready to go back. Everybody said, yes, we must go.
Yeah, all of the team say we must do that. It's our job.
It was now night, so we didn't have any night vision goggles. So we were now faced with going into an unlit airfield with an aircraft that didn't have the right equipment to allow us to do that in the safest possible way. So we discussed these issues with us as a crew and came to the conclusion that, well, yes, absolutely, we can go and do it. It's not ideal, the situation that we're in, but it's manageable, and weighing up the risk to us for the landing, what have you, yes, it was a little bit more risky than normal, but we just absolutely didn't want to leave those two guys on the ground any longer. So no, there was never any doubt that we were going to go and do that, and the whole crew were behind me. The biggest threat to us was the other aircraft that were around, so the chance of a mid-air collision. So we kept everything as standard as possible, told the other crews and the other aircraft what we were doing, and we flew a standard approach.
Also in the cockpit with Jenks was Lars.
My name is Oberfeldwebel Lars. I'm a maintenance technician on the Airbus A400M. And yeah, I'm part of the Air Transport Wing 62 here. And I do on flights the basic maintenance, like servicing, refueling the aircraft. And we also advise the pilots in case there are any technical malfunctions. You could see the lights of Kabul, but the airport was just a pitch black dark spot in the city. So yeah, it was crazy. Aircrafts were communicating with a provisional very basic tower there. Some had to divert because they were running low on fuel. But at some point we were given the permission to commence the approach, and we did it. And it was absolutely crazy. I sat on the third seat in the cockpit, so basically behind the pilots. And yeah, we didn't have night vision goggles with us. And for me, it looked like we flew into a dark black wall.
So finally got in contact with the ground controller, and then we taxied off of the runway and taxied into the entrance to the apron. And then we just saw the scene that was unfolding in front of us. So we were at the edge of the apron, and looking ahead of us, straight down the center line of the apron, either side of the center line, there were half a dozen different aircraft from different nations. So A400s, C-17s, C-130s, from all sorts of different nations, all of them being loaded. So streams of people all over the place, streams of passengers, soldiers all over the place. And the ground controller said, right, your parking spot is the one right at the very end. By the way, there's no marshaller and nobody, no follow me, just make your own way. And there was just this sea of humanity ahead of us, everybody milling around, and we didn't have contact with the guys that we were there to meet. So stopped, and the loadmaster then put the ramp down, and the two military police guys got off the aircraft because we'd stopped, so they wanted to make sure that everything was secure.
Because we had no soldiers on board who would protect the aircraft in case there would be anyone want to do any harm to the aircraft. So before the landing, we made decisions of what we would do. And we decided it would be best to have one guy or two guys step outside, have a look around. And yeah, if in case anyone would come up to either make contact with him or engage him. We had in the back two people with rifles pointing to the left and to the right in case anyone would come up, so they would protect the aircraft. And I was just getting ready to deboard the aircraft with a pistol to have a general overview of what's happening around us, because the pilots cannot see everything around the aircraft. And I was just getting ready to do that, and suddenly we saw in the distance that a light was flashing in the from outside into a cockpit. And Jenks was like, hey, there are lights flashing, what is that? And I came up, and I don't know how or why, but I had a flashlight in my hand and flashed back at them, so they would know we see them, and they know that we know about them. So yeah, they came closer and we saw their silhouettes emerging from the darkness, and they had a few bags with them. We've seen that. And they were running closer and closer to the aircraft.
And they were both dragging enormous cases with them, wearing helmets with weapons. So clearly they were soldiers rather than civilians, which was a good start. But they were running straight towards the aircraft and straight towards the aircraft engines. So we've got two huge spinning propellers on each wing, and they were running directly towards, and my heart just sunk. I thought, my goodness, we've made it all this way, and then the danger for them running into the propellers was just that. Yeah, that was a heart-stopping moment.
We ran to the back of the aircraft, lowered the ramp, and we flashed with or illuminated the number four engine with our flashlight, so that two German soldiers would see the propeller disc spinning and that they would not run into it, because that would be very madness. So the two German guys ran around the aircraft, and yeah, this is just like what a typical paratrooper sees. He sees the open ramp, so he knows what to do. He came close to us. We picked up his bags. They were very, very heavy, I do remember. And the guys, they were in German uniforms. They were obviously the guys we searched for. So we loaded them and put the ramp back up, closed the aircraft, and made it ready for departure.
I got a seat belt, and I calmed down.
Has anything like this ever happened to you before?
No. You train and exercise to make to manage the logistic, but you don't train that you left behind in an international airport. It's not like you forgot or you get forgot at a shooting range, that you take your backpack and walk at a military base. And you're in a foreign land, and you have nothing on you, a cell phone, and you have to react.
So as we then got airborne, got up above the safe altitude that we needed to be to fly back home, I then radioed into Wunstorf over the SATCOM and let them know that we'd picked up the guys and we were on our way home.
I got a beer on the aircraft, and you think about it not on the flight to Uzbekistan. I think about this situation when I get especially at home. When you take your wife in arms, see the kids, and then you remind, I was the last man, or the last German man on Kabul International Airport. Then the feelings came. You cry, you get tears in your eyes, and you take your wife to you, hold it in your arms, but on the flight, especially to Uzbekistan, no, you don't think about this. You are thankful, but especially about the situation, you recovered a few days later.
Not long after Wheels Up, they had their first beer in their hand, and I think they were starting to then feel a little bit better, because I can only imagine what it must have been like for them on the ground, watching their aircraft one, aircraft two, aircraft three disappear. So yeah, they were looked after in the cargo compartment. And then as soon as I had a little bit of free capacity and free time, then I called for them to come up into the cockpit so they could come up and firstly say hello, and then be up there for the landing into Tashkent. And I don't remember very much at all about meeting them, actually. So I guess still focused on what we were doing and the flying, what have you. But I do remember there was a little bit of surprise from one of the two that they'd been rescued by a foreigner.
We get the chance to fly with the aircraft in the cockpit, and we saw that Flight Lieutenant Mark was not a German pilot.
Because obviously they'd come in and seen my Union Jack on my right shoulder, and then asked sort of what's going on, why is there a Brit there? It was a friendly, funny thing.
It makes no difference if it's a German pilot or a British pilot or someone else.
It's really, really nice. And it was such a good feeling then to know that we've done something really worthwhile, because I'd been through my whole career and I'd done a lot of super interesting things and I've moved stuff all around the world. But this time it was actually really important what we were doing. And I think until it happens, you never know how you're going to react. You hear stories of things that other people have done, and you wonder, well, if I were in that situation, how would I react? And I've now seen that, I've answered that question, and I'm really proud of what we did and how it worked out and how we worked together as a team, and how everything has kind of come together to that point. The excellent training that I've had with the Brits, the excellent training that I've had with the Germans, and the fact that I can then be, as a Royal Air Force officer, the captain of a German aircraft that can go and do something like that and actually really make a difference and really do something. It was, I'm really proud.
But the story doesn't end here. In April 2023, Jenks was involved in another evacuation operation, this time airlifting German nationals out of war-torn Sudan.
So the Germans at the time were based in Jordan as their forward operating base.
And so I turned up there and was involved straight away in the planning and looking at what was going to be happening for the first missions. And I think unusually, the Army and the Luftwaffe, we always worked closely together, but we were actually in the same building. So I would come into the building and sort of walk past the logistics center and what have you to get to the air operations center. So there was a very, very close working relationship, and I was just in our ops room, and this chap came up to me. I didn't recognize him, and he started talking to me in English. I said, "No, it's okay, we can talk in German." So he then started talking to me, but in the formal German. No, we can, it's first name terms, so we're all good. They said, "Okay, hi, then were you the captain of the last aircraft out of Kabul?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah. My name's Chef, and I'm one of the guys that you rescued."
Lieutenant Colonel came to me and said, "Stefan, you are the last man on Kabul airport." And I said, "Yes, yes, there is your pilot from the aircraft which you get out of Kabul." I said, "Whoa, that's very cool." And I took the second coin and we go to Mark and I gave him this coin, and we hold each other.
What did you talk about in that moment?
I said nothing. We only hold each other in the arms and feeling the moment.
And then straight away, I mean, it's kind of gives me goosebumps now thinking about it, but it's just, we then just gave each other a hug, and then he said, "Look, thank you so much for that. And by the way, I've had some coins made." So the Germans have taken all the American idea of sort of having coins pressed for various things, and he had these 20 coins minted. And he said, "Look, I've been carrying these around just in case I happen to run into any of the crew. And now I've seen you, and I just want to give you the coin." So he handed the coin to me, and then it all kind of got a little bit dusty in there, so we had to go outside and get a little bit of fresh air and have a coffee and just share our experiences. And it was just such a wonderful coincidence that we first met on one evacuation operation and then met in completely different circumstances, but again on an evacuation operation. And from then we've stayed in touch.
Now that some time has passed since this unfolded, what do you talk about when you reflect on what happened in Kabul?
When I talk with Mark about Kabul, there are always tears in my eyes. Happiness, feeling happiness, but I have tears in my eyes. About the whole situation. Happy that he lands on the Kabul airport. Happy about that he fly out us. Thankful. Only thankful that he lands with this aircraft on this day, at this situation.
What did Cenk say to you when you were in the Sudan together? Did he tell you to stay close to him this time round?
He said, "Don't get the last aircraft."
I mean, I'm in a slightly special, slightly unusual situation in that I'm completely embedded within the Luftwaffe, and I've been here for 10 years now, pretty much. So I know everybody. I know everybody below me who's kind of coming up through the sort of the young co-pilots. I know the commanders here, and I feel that I have a very special relationship here with the people here. But then looking a little bit wider, we had the Air Defender exercise last year where Americans, Romanians came here And then we all started working together, and everybody knows and respects the other armed forces. So I can go and work with an American, with a Romanian. We have a Hungarian exchange officer here, and I can go and work with him, and we both know where we stand, we both know where we're coming from, we both know where we're trying to get to, and the camaraderie just works, and you just meet people and start talking to them and working with them as if you've known them for years. And it's wonderful.
We have camaraderie in the armed forces. It's very important for friendships that form within our armed forces. Do you feel like, having worked with NATO allies, that camaraderie is just as important?
Yeah, it's important because you have to trust comrades from other nations. It's an important thing. So if there are no trust, you can't fight with them.
For someone that's never taken a NATO role before, someone that's never been involved in NATO before that might be listening to us today, could you, hand on heart, honestly recommend it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I came out to Germany in 2014 for 3 years, and it's now been 10 years, and I'm just stringing it out for as long as I possibly can. It's absolutely wonderful. I spent 4 years over in America as well, working with the Americans, and to be honest, I'm looking for the next exchange to Canada, Australia, wherever you'll have me.
The evacuation operation from Kabul was one of the largest in history. Between the 14th and 25th of August 2021, 122,000 people were airlifted out of the country. The military evacuation was completed on August 30th, one day before the agreed deadline with the Taliban. In recognition of his efforts in the Afghanistan airlift, the senior leadership team of the Luftwaffe sent a letter of appreciation directly to the Chief of the Air Staff of the Royal Air Force. Flight Lieutenant Jenks was also awarded the German Campaign Medal for this operation. He remains the only non-German serving person to be honored in this way. NATO 75, an Alliance Rescue, was presented and produced by me, Amy Casey, with sound editing and design by Sean Harper. Our program editor is Josella Waldron. With thanks to the Royal Air Force, the German Air Force, the Bundeswehr Press and Information Center, Master Sergeant Stefan, Technical Loadmaster Gruby, Maintenance Tech Lars, and Flight Lieutenant Mark Jenkins.